Well, good day, wherever you may be. Welcome to Observations. I'm here with Kirk and Scott today. And fellas, it was should have been a fairly inconsequential footnote in history. An outgoing president in his last month in office. I'm working with a world body that has no teeth and really has no credibility. Sponsored a resolution condemning building houses in a city that has was initially established as the capital of a people 3,000 years ago. While not bothering to mention the terror that has been inflicted upon those people, the history of that place, or the fact that those who claim it have no credibility. They've never existed as a people. Their country has never existed as what they refer to it as. So it should have just been a footnote in history, a condemnation on building houses. But that's not what's going to happen. And the United States, you know, you might say, what's the big deal? All the United States did was abstain. It's not like they voted against Israel. And after all, the vote was 14-0 against building houses and in favor of promoting the myth that there is such a thing as a place called Palestine and a people called Palestinians. The myth that if you appease terrorists, you achieve peace.
Sounds pretty stupid, doesn't it?
So here we are. I would like to share what I think is the consequence of this, and let's just talk about some of the details and some of the horrific justifications that the Secretary of State of the United States recently elaborated upon to explain why the United States did this. What is going to occur is that now, since building homes in Jerusalem and what's erroneously called the West Bank, it's actually Judea and Samaria, has been officially condemned in the United Nations, the people who ignorantly, irrationally refer to themselves as Palestinians, who have no claim whatsoever to the land, are going to work with co-conspirators around the world to isolate Israel even further, to boycott Israel, to sanction Israel, all such that the military, economic pain, the isolation of Israel will put the nation in a position where ultimately they capitulate to the pressure of the United States and give the terrorists Judea and Samaria, the West Bank. And that will lead to the Magog War that Yahweh has predicted these low many years, almost 3,000 years now. And that it's going to justify Yahweh's condemnation of the United States as the perpetrator of these events. It will become illegal for nations around the world to sell Israel the war materials necessary to prevent the onslaught of Islam and the murder and rape of its people. This is what's at stake. And as we talk about it, the one thing I want to have everyone keep in mind is that 2 years ago, we did a series of programs on shattering myths, specifically about what Kerry, the Secretary of State under the Obamanator, set in place to undermine Israel, to tell Israel, you will either capitulate and make yourself vulnerable, indefensible to these Islamic terrorists, masquerading as Palestinians, or we will see to it that you're isolated by the entire world, that we will abandon you as the United States, and the world will uniformly boycott and sanction you. You will either capitulate now, or this will be the consequence. And when his plot was revealed by WikiLeaks and others, and forestalled, they waited until the last 30 days of this presidency to impose their will. So, fellas, what do you think?
Didn't even have the gall to vote.
The character, yeah. Right? The character. Spineless worms.
You'd like to say that he stabbed him in the back, but he smiled right in his face as he put the knife in his chest. I mean, I texted you almost right away when it happened, and I said, "This is we have to talk about this. This is a little bit too."
And he's been an anti-Semite since the day that since his upbringing with Reverend Wright's church. It's been obvious that he is anti-Semitic, that he's been pro-Islam. He's written about it. He's admitted it. He's declared it even at Al Jazeera as he had his speech trying to reshape the relationship between America and the Islamic world, telling them that they were right, that this was their time, that America would stand with them.
Yeah, I'm. Go ahead, Kirk.
No. I was just going to say that when Scott emailed us, we went and last night we studied his speech in detail. And
this would be Secretary of State Kerry's.
Yeah, Kerry's speech.
Because the Abominator didn't even bother to offer an explanation. He had Susan Powers. Yeah, designate to the United Nations. He had her seek to justify it, and of course she blamed the Israelis.
Of course.
Yeah, and that's one of the scary parts for me on this, is that I always knew that, you know, anti-Semitism is something that is very, very real.
Mm-hmm.
But with the amount
of growing.
People, oh yeah, mm-hmm. with the amount of people that are just all, well, then they should give the Palestinians what they want. What? Yeah. Me and Kirk were talking before you connected. The Israel has said, "Look, we will do the two-state thing, but it has to be a fair thing." And Netanyahu came out and he said that, you know,
I don't think that is correct.
No, I don't think they would.
I don't think there's anybody empowered in Israel who has even a moment's thought that offering the mythical people who are called the Palestinians, a state called Palestine, is a solution to anything.
I hope you're right.
It will accomplish, and they know it, the exact same thing as Neville Chamberlain giving the high ground of Czechoslovakia to Adolf Hitler. It will accomplish the exact same thing as George Bush forcing Israel to surrender Gaza to Hamas. That's what it will accomplish, and they all know
right
it.
On that. I hope you're right on that, and I hope they all know that. The part that he was saying is, and I don't understand how you even think people should have to negotiate on this, is that he said, look, we are all inclusive. In Israel, you have Arabs, you have Christians, and you have Jewish people, people of the Jewish faith. And he goes, but they want to do a state, and their one demand is that there's no Jews. And he goes, how is that? How do you even make me? How do we even negotiate that?
Yeah, it's our elimination that serves as the central plank of their charter. It isn't that they covet Israel. Israel means nothing to them. It's not that they covet this particular land. They already control 99.8% of the land in the Middle East. They don't covet this land. They have no ties, no history to it. Their only reason for existence is because their religion motivates them to call for the utter destruction of Israel and the elimination of all Jews.
And why because Muhammad didn't like them because they said, look, you're just using our stories.
Well, yeah.
And we did that. We wrote that.
Right. Right. The history of Islam's anti-Semitism does go directly back to Muhammad. There was no disagreements, no fighting, no animosity of any kind. In fact, total cooperation between Arabs and Jews at the time of Muhammad's birth. Proof of this is that three quarters of the town of Yathrib, named after Yah, been renamed Medina, circa 670 to 700 CE, was that the three quarters of the population that were Jewish were industrial. They were farmers. They produced a standard of living in that community that exceeded others, and they did it without being religious. You know, unlike Mecca, whose only claim was this rock pile of a pagan shrine called the Kaaba. Yathrib was a farming community, productive. And that is where they worked together. As a matter of fact, when Muhammad first went to Yathrib, his followers, and he only had about, well, the greatest number you could possibly claim would be 70 at the time. His followers didn't work. Muhammad never worked. They were totally and completely dependent. And the Jews fed them. They provided them loans so that they could live. They provided them housing. And Muhammad was so impoverished, and he had, at this point, pilfered and plagiarized the entirety of what he knew of the of Hanif paganism and the old paganism of Mecca related to the Kaaba, that he was out of suras to ascribe to his wannabe god. And so he used the money that had been loaned to them by the Jews, who were thriving and productive in Yathrib, to buy Talmud stories. And he took those Talmud stories, bastardized them, and then twisted them to serve his own perverted interests to create the last 20-some-odd surahs of the Quran. They're all plagiarized and twisted Talmud stories. And then when the Jews, when he started to be murderous to the Jews, took the first community of Jews, first Arab to turn on Jews, first Arab. And he took the first community and he stole their property and exiled them. They moved then to Khyber, where Muhammad, in his last and most ruthless terrorist attack, murdered all the men, raped the women, and stole their property a second time. It's where the line Allahu Akbar was originally derived. Allah is greater than the God of the Jews, Yahweh, from the Islamic perspective. And he attacked them. His justification for attacking them is because they charged interest on the loans they made to him. Muhammad was so ignorant. He had no idea that the only way that you can loan money is to charge interest. It's the only motivation for loaning money. It's the only way that loaning money makes any sense. And so he condemned them for charging interest on their loans. And he didn't have the wherewithal to pay them back because none of his followers were working. The only job they ever engaged in the first 10 years of the Islamic era, once they moved to Yathrib, was armed robbery.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. That was the only thing they did economically, was armed robbery. And so they couldn't pay him back and didn't want to pay him back once they confiscated the property of other productive people. And then the response of the Jews was to say, hey, Muhammad, get over it. Every revelation that you're claiming has been given to you by Allah is in fact a bastardization of a story from the Talmud that you purchased from us. And we know that, and you know that. And if you continue to act this belligerently, we'll expose you for doing that. And so Muhammad's response was to kill them. Dead men tell no tales. One day in Yathrib, Muhammad sat in the center of the town marketplace, place that he had nothing to do with. And systematically, in front of their wives and children, mothers, he cut off, he had his henchmen cut off the heads of 900 men and boys. Cut off the heads, decapitating them.
I've seen that same practice today on a video.
They still do it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's Muhammad's behavior, and he is the best example for a Muslim to follow. They robbed them, they murdered them, and then Muhammad chose the prettiest of the Jewish women to rape. And then he allowed his mercenaries, the first Muslims, to play a game of lots to choose who they wished to rape.
Did all this happen before or after he married the six-year-old?
Oh, this was long after. This was 12 years after he began to have sex with the six-year-old. He married her when she was nine. This is the most perverted man who ever lived. The most disgusting religion ever attributed to any god. And it is anti-Semitic for the very reasons that we have just stated. And I mean by anti-Semitic, I don't mean in the sense of Arab versus Jew. I mean in the sense of Islam and Allah versus Yahweh. Shem is the Hebrew word for name. It's opposed to the name. That is why Allahu Akbar at Kabar, when Muhammad brought his goons back from Mecca after he capitulated and signed the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, saying that he wouldn't terrorize or rob or murder Meccans for another 10 years. His mercenaries were aghast. They had gone down there to plunder, to rape. And not given that opportunity, they threatened to rebel against him. And so he brought them to Kabar to get a second swipe and a final swipe at the Jews. That's when he screamed, Allahu Akbar. It means Allah is greater than Yahweh, the God of the Jews.
Bigger, greater, older.
Yeah, that's exactly what Akbar means. And that's the context that was stated. Everything I've just shared with you is absolute, irrefutable fact. And yet the world wants to award Muslims who have consistently terrorized Jews since Muhammad's proclamation of the Quran back in around 700 CE with Israel. They want to give them Israel.
They've done a pretty good job of trying to terrorize all of us.
They have, haven't they?
I've heard your story about Thomas Jefferson. Why did he have a Quran? Because he wanted to find out why the Barbary pirates were attacking our ships.
Correct.
From the shores of Tripoli.
Right. That's it's in the Marine anthem. And it is, and that's the only reason he owned a Quran, is that when he met with the ambassador from the Ottoman Empire and asked him why they were pirating our ships, why they were kidnapping our soldiers, why they were robbing America, he says, because Muhammad told us to do so. Here, read the Quran. You will find that that's exactly what Muhammad told Muslims to do. Well, you know, Jefferson said, no, come on, I don't like religion. I'm skeptical of religion, but no religion can be that much of a mercenary enterprise. Yeah, exactly is what it is. I mean, there is absolutely no way that any Muslim can refute anything we've just said.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the world wants to enrich these Islamic terrorists for their claim on Israel. Now, you know why? Beyond the fact that Allah, who is modeled after Satan, mm-hmm. hates Jews, and Muhammad, because of the reasons we've just shared, hates Jews. The fact of the matter is that that the Quran claims that Muhammad, in the middle of the night, while in bed with his child bride, bride is really a despicable term to use to try to justify an act of pedophilia.
Victim.
Yes, his child victim. While he was in bed with her, and he was trying to deal with the consequence of the satanic verses, where he admitted, as did Paul of Christian fame, that he was inspired by Satan. He needed an excuse, a claim to fame. So what he claimed is, in the middle of the night, he got on a winged ass, and he rode on this winged ass during the night from Yathrib, today's Medina, all the way to Jerusalem, where he met inside of the temple, which he didn't know because he was stupid, and his God wasn't any better, had been destroyed by the Romans in 70 CE, and this was now 700 CE, and that he met in the temple with the bigwigs of Hebrew persuasion, Abraham, Yosha, although he didn't know Yosha's name, and with Adam, and with Moshe, although he didn't know Moshe's name either. And that there they discussed all things Allah. Of course, Allah is a perverse term in Hebrew. Yahweh has only one name, and he says, by a god by any other name is a false god. And then it's what's really interesting, which is telling about this, but this is why the Dome of the Rock allegedly exists on the Temple Mount, is because Muhammad in this dream claimed that he and his winged ass jumped from that spot up to heaven. And you know what the first stop was en route to heaven?
Satan over to hell.
Yeah, the Islamic hell. And that's where he met with Satan. And he said the vision there in hell, what he witnessed was that almost all of the inhabitants were women. And, oh, what a delightful time they were having in this, what is, from God's point of view, is a spiritual realm that is akin to a black hole, which means there's no light, no fire, no torture, no nothing. It's just a realm that is infinite in time and total separation from God, which is curious as to why Allah is always depicted in the place that God says he can never go. The women were all hung from their breasts by meat hooks. Now imagine being a Muslim and you're so blankety-blank stupid that you would believe the words of a man who claimed that God spends all of his time in hell, that most of the inhabitants are women, and that they're hung from their breasts by meat hooks. But that's what this perverted piece of crap known as Muhammad had to say. And then when he was asked, why would that be? He explained, because they didn't appreciate and they were ungrateful for all that their husbands had done for them. Muhammad hated women. That's why he was a rapist. That's why he was a pedophile. That's why he was a sexual pervert.
And again, it's not like they don't practice all that today.
No, they do all those things to gay. They rape little girls. They sell them as sex slaves, something the Quran condones. And yet, it is towards the advancement of this perverse religion, this disgusting book, this horrid wannabe God, this perverted man, that the United States and the United Nations condemned Israel for building homes because they want those who are the advocates of this perverse religion to take over Israel. It makes your toes want to curl up. It makes the skin on your back of your arms crawl. So how did Kerry seek to justify the unjustifiable?
Well, as I took notes on it, first of all, it's a sales pitch, obviously a sales pitch. And I was interested in it because it is so much the same verbiage as the Torahless one will use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a precursor without doubt. But before his speech...
Known to Christians as the Antichrist.
Antichrist.
All right.
The assumption...
The reason we don't call him the Antichrist is of course, his words and his behavior are going to be identical to the Christian interpretation of Christ.
Yeah.
And so there's no reason to call him an antichrist when he, in fact,
he's
going to advocate Christianity. In fact, the first thing he's going to do is impose the Sunday law, which means he's going to impose Christianity just like Theodosius did in 400 CE. When Rome transitioned from Imperial Rome to the Roman Catholic Church, he's going to advocate Christianity. He's not going to outlaw Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't call him the Antichrist unless you know that he is anti the Messiah, but exactly. But he's going to parrot the interpretation, the characterization of the Christian character, that was conceived by Paul, known as Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he started out with, overall, there's about six assumptions that you have to have in order for his speech to have any credibility, and he's assuming that everybody's on mm-hmm. same page with him. And the first thing is you have to assume that the U.S. is moral and justified in telling somebody what to do, i.e. a country.
Yeah, that's amazing that America thinks that it is justified. And the vast majority of Americans agree with us, that America is somehow justified in telling other countries what to do. And that's our role on earth, is to tell other countries what they ought to do.
Now, my wife would tell you that she would laugh out loud, because she would say, well, wait a minute, the U.S. has done everything that they're claiming Israel has done to people who own the land.
Of course. Yeah.
I mean, look what we did to the Indians. Look what we did to mm-hmm. slaves. Look what we did to Florida. What we did to the Mexicans.
Yeah, the Jews the Jews did not.
All those other countries. Let's just start there.
When the Jews returned to Israel, they didn't enslave the Palestinians.
No.
In fact, the Palestinians, first of all, there's no such thing as a Palestinian. They didn't enslave the Muslims who were there in the land.
Yeah.
They didn't take the land from them.
No.
And they did not enslave them. As a matter of fact, the Muslims who were living in Israel and remained in Israel had by far the greatest opportunities for enlightenment, education, health care, personal enrichment through work, of any Muslims anywhere in the world. They had the best quality of life, the greatest educational opportunities, the greatest economic opportunities, and the most freedom of any Muslims anywhere in the world at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's by the reason, by the way, that is the express reason for the Intifada.
Yeah.
The Intifada was specifically conceived by Yasser Arafat, the ugly one,
mm-hmm.
because the quality of life for Muslims living inside of Israel was so vastly superior to Muslims living any place else that it had to stop, because it was an embarrassment to Islam.
Are they?
And so that what Arafat did is that the way to stop that, to prevent Muslims in Israel from being prosperous, is to order Muslims in Israel to murder Jews, to murder their employers, to murder everyone that they could. That'll fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it did.
Well, that goes around with the same assumptions. You know, he let me get through these real quick, because
okay.
kind of touching on a lot of that. But one of the assumptions was that Israel is occupying someone else's land, which you've already discussed.
Now, how is that possible, Kirk?
Yeah, well, you can't.
You know, what's really interesting here is that if you go back in time, the first we know about this land is that it was that Canaanites lived in it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any evidence that there is a Canaanite anywhere in the world today?
Not a shred.
Not a shred, is there? And then the Yabusi were in the Jerusalem. That's their because all Jerusalem was a series of hills, particularly Moriah and the Mount of Olives. And it was way too steep there to really create a prosperous community.
Hard to grow stuff there.
Hard to grow stuff there. You were dependent on springs, but when David appeared there, it was Yabusi that were there. Are there any Yabusi around these days?
No one's claiming to be.
No, there aren't any Yabusi, are there? No, no. It's kind of a small little fiefdom anyway, but no, they don't exist anymore. No. And when Dode, and by the way, when Dode arrived there, he had no intent to engage in war with them. But they decided that these other people, we're not going to share. They cannot live here.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided that they would do their level best to annihilate David and his followers. And when they failed, and they were boisterous and braggadocious about it, and they just failed.
Mm-hmm.
And so they faded into the woodwork, just gone. But you know what's interesting is that there is no sign that that Dode kicked them out or stole their land. As a matter of fact, the story is really interesting. Abruzzi, the Yebusite, owned the best piece of property in all of Jerusalem, didn't he?
Yes.
He owned the threshing floor that is now the Temple Mount in Jerusalem.
And Dode would not allow him to give it to him.
Yeah, isn't this amazing? Is that even though this is the place that the center of the most contested place on earth, and that these people had tried to prevent David from living there, that once David prevailed and they lost, David didn't kick them out, didn't take what belonged to them, because the best piece of property in town was still owned by a Yabusi.
Mm-hmm.
And a Jebusite. And not only that, when Dode was told, this is where we're going to build the temple. Temple's not even a right term. The house for the covenant of Yahweh. The Jebusite said, hey, listen, I am fully aware of who Yahweh is.
Yeah, take it.
And so just consider it my gift.
Yeah.
I'm delighted to give it. As a matter of fact, you can have the implements that were used on this threshing floor. You can have my oxen. You can have it all. I am pleased to be able to do it. What a wonderful cause. I am, consider me all in.
Totally on board.
Right. And Dode says, no. I'm I appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I'm going to offer you a fair price for it. I'm going to buy it. And he bought it.
Did.
And now, the evidence for Dode, some would say, oh, well, that's all folklore in the Bible. So, and of course, there is no Bible, but in the Torah and the prophets and the Psalms, that's all folklore. But son of a gun, haven't we now found absolute proof that every statement therein is archaeologically, scientifically, historically, geographically accurate?
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, for years, the claim against it had always been things like the Hittites never existed. It talks about the Hittites. Well, son of a gun. The Hittites were amazing. Yeah. That there's no record independent of that of David, of Dode. Well, guess what? Lots of them.
Mm.
Lots of them. Well, there's no record of the Hebrews having their own alphabet. Oh, well, sorry, you missed on that, too. Well, there's no record of Dode actually having a sit as his home in Jerusalem. Well, sorry about that, but you lose on that, too. Every time. No evidence of Abraham coming in. Well, that's not true either. Everything that God said. The conquest of Jerusalem by the Babylonians and the Assyrians prior to them. Absolute proof. Yeah, in their own languages, the assailants' languages found in tablet form.
Tablets all over the place.
Right.
Exactly what happened.
Now, what's interesting here is twofold. One is that Yahweh's precisely accurate depiction of the who, what, and where of his people living in Yisrael and of Jerusalem being their home.
Mm-hmm. No question.
The, There's no question about it. He absolutely proves that because of the accuracy of his presentation, it's the most accurate historical book in the universe. I mean, this is not an issue of faith. You just take the time and study any one of its claims and then investigate them. Mm-hmm. But where's the only place on Earth that a people known as the Philistine is actually presented?
In the Torah.
Yeah, Torah, prophets, and so on.
That was the third assumption that Perry is asking you to believe. That
yeah. So this is what's really interesting here, Kirk and Scott, is that the name Philistine, which is the basis of Palestinian and Palestine, apart from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, it is wholly and completely unknown to history. And so if the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is not reliable, then they're not a people, there's not a people, and that's not a place. If the Torah, prophets, and Psalms are reliable, and Yahweh proves that they are, then the land in its entirety belongs to the Jews, and that the Philistines, Philistae, are terrorist invaders.
Mm-hmm.
It's the definition of the word.
Yeah.
And that the only history of who they were and what they lived and where they lived and what they did, and was, by the way, in the area of Gaza, concludes with the Assyrians wiping them out, such that there is not a single Palestinian Philistine alive. Not one.
No.
And they had no civilization. They had no writing. No buildings that have survived to be found through archaeology. And there's absolutely no connection between none. The people who claim to be Palestinians and the Philistines of old.
Right.
None.
So that's the fourth assumption that Mr. Carey, a.k.a. Lurch, wants you to take this giant leap and say that the Palestinians now will be peaceful and productive if given this land.
Yeah.
Is there any evidence whatsoever?
Kind of like what Neville Chamberlain made the same claim, wouldn't he? You know, you give the Germans who live, the ethnic Germans, who live in Czechoslovakia.
Yeah.
You give them their own claim.
Tell that to the Polish.
Yeah. I don't tell that to the Czechs.
No. And then the probably the fifth one is...
Don't tell that to the 50 million people who died.
No, died.
As a result of that stupidity that Kerry doesn't seem to appreciate the lesson of that history. And by the way, at least the Germans, ethnic Germans in Czechoslovakia, had a were legitimately Germanic peoples.
Yeah.
The so-called Palestinians living in Israel have absolutely no claim.
They can be Arabs and they can be Jordanians.
Right.
Because they came to work.
All right. Yeah, they can be Arabs and they can be Muslims. You can call them either one of the two. So but you absolutely cannot call them Palestinians. In fact, they weren't even called Palestinians until after Israel was given that land. And that's when they were first called Palestinians. And it was all to promote a myth on an ignorant world that that they were somehow identified with this place, that they were a unique people who owned this place. When Israel was given Israel back, Israelites were given Israel back, did they say death to the Arabs, death to the Muslims?
No. They said, you're welcome here.
You're welcome here. You can live here with us. Yeah, we want you to live here with us. Who told them to leave?
Yeah.
Who told them to leave?
Oh, yes, sir. Arafat.
Yeah, the Arab League. Yeah. The Arab League told them, which is the Muslim League, told them to leave so that the united Islamic armies could wipe the Jews off the face of the earth. One final solution. As a matter of fact, who really came up with the concept of the final solution? Of murdering Jews as opposed to relocating them.
The imam of Jerusalem who met with Hitler's people.
Exactly. Yeah. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem.
Yeah. So,
Husseini.
So along that same line, then Kerry believes that because these people will be productive if they're given the land, that Israel will no longer be insecure.
Oh, yeah. Gaza was given that land. The Hamas-controlled Muslims in Gaza, they were given that land. Did they become productive, or are they still wholly and completely dependent on handouts from the rest of the world?
They're totally that. The Hamas took over. They allow it to happen. They don't resist.
They don't work. I've been through that. They don't work.
No.
They're wholly... So, Kerry's principle...
When are they going to turn around and become productive?
They haven't. Now, I would ask you this, too. Is the Muslims living in Ramallah and places, Hebron and other places like this, Bethlehem, are they net contributors, independently productive, or are they like all of the so-called Palestinians, wholly dependent on handouts from the rest of the world?
Well, I mean, if you don't flow the money, I don't think they can survive very long. I mean, there's some shopkeepers and things, but I mean, it's not...
Not even many of those.
Be a Muslim and embrace hard work and opportunity and stuff.
Very few Muslims work hard. That is true.
So Terry believes that his sixth thing you have to believe is that the Muslims would not abide by the Quran and destroy Israel and become terrorists.
Mm-hmm. Now, if a Muslim is not a jihadist, it can't even be a Muslim. According to the Ninth Surah, if you are not a jihadist, you cease to be a Muslim. So, what the Quran says, that you're a hypocrite if you claim to be a Muslim and you do not support jihad.
So his speech went on and on and on and on, and it's interesting. Maybe we'll cover some of this tonight, but it was plank after plank after plank, which was the same diatribe. And then, really interesting, and hopefully we'll get to that. I had about three more pages of this, so for you to comment on. But he came up with his conclusion was he had a six-plank plan of how all this would work, and I thought it very interesting.
Plan being 6 points, of course. Man
and
being the number six.
Down, you know, man has six. Yahweh has a six-plank plan that goes all the way through Kippurim, and then he has one extra plank.
The destination, the purpose of the whole thing. Right, Sukkah.
Yeah, so,
camping out together.
So Kerry got his plan, and Yahweh's got his plan.
Plan of man. Plan of man to the plan of God.
But the whole thing with a two-part, you have to buy all that stuff to begin with, and then he goes on to talk about to be a viable democracy and come to terms with peace, and then if, you know...
Can you list a viable democracy in the Islamic world?
There is none.
No. Matter of fact, like even in Indonesia, no. I mean, it's a viable democracy in the world? And that's really an interesting point, because the only really two attempts at democracy were the Delian League by the Greeks, which was really a military pact where democracy was imposed, just like America is trying to do, and it failed. And then Sparta, which was probably the worst example in human history of a civilization gone amok. But representative government and what we refer to as democracy, no, there isn't a viable example in the world today. But in the Islamic world, the only two countries that could even posture a premise of democracy would be Turkey and Indonesia. And yet you look at Indonesia, where the mayor of one of the largest cities is being condemned for insulting Islam, because there's no free speech. There's no freedom of religion, no freedom of speech. How can you have a democracy without freedoms?
Well, you can't. How can you run a business if you can't trust things and say, it just can't work.
And of course, in Turkey, you have the Islamic party under Erdogan imposing an Islamic dictatorship.
But Kerry would have you believe that if Israel cannot have a viable democracy unless they agree with a two-state solution, it will not have peace. Well,
I believe his exact quote is that Israel cannot be Jewish and a democrat and democratic.
Yeah,
I believe that's his exact quote.
Yeah, and since Yahweh established Israel as Jewish, as Yehudim, then Kerry is in conflict with God. You know, it's interesting too, when Yahweh was establishing Yisrael, and he allocated territories to each of the 12 tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just pretend that these, I'm Sioux Indian. I'm part of the covenant. I mean, I have full inheritance from Yahweh.
Sure.
Was there any place in Israel that was awarded to the Sioux?
No, probably not.
How about the English?
No.
The French?
Not even people from Alabama. Or Minnesota.
So from God's perspective, Israel is Jewish, period. End of conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now, what he is basically saying is that you can't claim to be a Jewish state and have a democracy. Now, that being the case, then you can't have a democracy in any of the Islamic countries. That means that it's impossible to have a democracy in so-called Palestine, Kerry, but he's not willing to think it through that way, which is that any state that claims, as do all of the Islamic countries, that they are, like, it's the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan, it's the Islamic Republic of Iraq. Therefore, if you are of a different faith, you have no standing.
Out of town, man.
Yeah, you have no standing. So it's impossible for the Philistines, or wannabe Philistines, the Palestinians, to have a democracy, Kerry, if you want to use your logic.
Yeah.
Now, as for Israel, Israel afforded citizenship to Arab Muslims.
Yes.
So to the degree that we actually pretend that democracy exists today, Israel is as much a democracy as any country on earth.
Now remember, we didn't do that to black people and Indians.
Right. No, we didn't. America most certainly didn't. No, we didn't tell the Cherokee and the Seminoles and the Sioux that, you know, you're welcome to be part of our country and join us, and we'll cohabitate all this with you, and we'll share the land. No, we were murderous.
But Kerry will tell you that this will occur because the U.S. is promising security. Now, just an aside, as Terry and I were talking, who the hell's going to pay for this?
Well,
and why?
And by the way, is the United States' idea of security what we did to Iraq?
Yeah.
A million people are dead. Is it what we did to Afghanistan? Is that the American?
Vietnam or any other thing?
Or Vietnam? Is it what we is the United States' idea of security what is transpiring now in Syria? Is the United States' idea of security what happened in Yemen, in Somalia?
Well, he said, "Don't worry, though, Israel. We got you."
How would you like to be a Christian in the promise of security that we have provided to Egypt?
Yeah.
I would argue that all those things that you just mentioned have actually done more to hurt my security.
Oh, of course. How about security in Libya?
No.
The United States deployed its military to provide peace and prosperity and freedom and democracy in Syria, didn't we? And Libya. How well did that work out?
It unleashed horror.
Yeah. How much better is Iraq now than it was under Saddam Hussein?
It's a cesspool.
Infinitely worse. So the United States' promise of peace and security is absolutely and totally worse than worthless. It's counterproductive. Our invasion of Iraq was counterproductive. Our invasion of Afghanistan, counterproductive. Our bombing of Libya, counterproductive. Our influence in Syria, counterproductive. Our drones attacks in Yemen, counterproductive.
Else he said that I thought was terribly interesting, you might have fun with it. He said we never put sanctions on Israel, even though he implied that we should have. And be that as it may, then he followed that with
we've never placed sanctions on Israel. So Israel could purchase whatever weapon system that it wanted to protect itself, to defend itself?
Yeah, because he said so.
And the United States didn't restrict trade with Israel when they didn't capitulate. You know, what's interesting is that 2 years ago, Kerry must have a failed memory, because 2 years ago, he told Netanyahu that if you don't capitulate and give the Palestinians a state under the plan that I have laid out, then we will ensure that not only does the United States, but the rest of the world will sanction you. You'll be completely and totally isolated.
I mean, talk about, you know, that's what the mafias do. If you don't pay, somebody going to book, you know, somebody going to throw a rock in your window.
Oh, yeah, you have total freedom, Israel, and you have our unchallenged support so long as you do exactly what we tell you to do.
Right.
If you're willing to capitulate, which is akin to committing suicide, because what happened with Czechoslovakia when they capitulated? Suicide. Giving up the West Bank and Jerusalem for Israel is instant suicide. And the fact is, Yahweh told us this was going to happen. The United States would be the agent that brokered this suicidal
attack. Well, that can't be because we've seen God Bless America.
So here's the Secretary of State on behalf of the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Pact of the American people.
Right. Literally taking to the world to the precipice of World War III.
Right.
At the very place the World War III is going to commence. For the very reason it's going to commence.
But they should be safe because his following point was that we have given more military spending, more military aid to Israel than any other country. So they must
Well, if that's the case, then why has the neighboring countries, like for example
Saudi Arabia,
been given hundreds of billions of dollars worth of military hardware when Israel is given billions of dollars?
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between Israel and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Qatar. As a matter of fact, about 2 years ago, I looked at U.S. military sales to Islamic nations and totaled them, and U.S. military sales to Israel. And guess what? Rather than this truth of we give more military aid to Israel than any other nation, the fact of the matter is that the ratio is 25 to 1. We give 25 times more military hardware to Israel's enemies than we do to Israel. Now, the difference and the reason that, and this is the reason you should never trust a representative of any government. What he said was military aid. So we have a deal with Israel where we underwrite some of their purchases of military hardware. America tells them exactly what they must buy. For example, now F-35s that even the military doesn't want. That we tell them what to buy. We tell them how they can use them. We completely control the process, but we give them about $3 billion of incentives to buy American weapons. And the OPECers, the Islamic nations, actually purchase these weapons outright because of the fact that they have they've nationalized private industry and have created fiefdoms that heretofore have created enormous wealth at the expense of Americans. And so the fact is it's 25 times more military hardware to Israel's enemies. You can look this up. Than to Israel.
Well,
he deliberately lied.
Yeah, completely.
Right. You know, and who, by the way, Scott, provides for almost the entire military budget of Egypt?
We do, don't we?
The United States.
Which is us. Which is
right.
Us three.
The United States. Right. Who underwrites almost all of the military budget and provides the weapons also to Pakistan?
Bingo.
That's also us.
Are Pakistan and Egypt pro-Israel? Are they Israeli allies?
I don't think so.
No. Dictatorships in both cases. One has this facade of democracy, but it's a country that is so polluted with Islam that there are scores of mercy killings, of honor killings, and mercy killings, honor killings, where a girl decides that she wants to choose who she's going to marry is butchered by her parents, where gangs of Muslims will go out and burn entire communities of Christians, just as they do today in Egypt. Of course, this is the religion in Egypt where 90% of the little girls have their genitals mutilated by their mothers. The Muslim population of Egypt corresponds to that same 90%. And yet we advocated on behalf of these sexual perverts, of these jihadi terrorists, of these mass murderers who have absolutely no claim to the land over Yahweh, who gave it to his chosen people. The 18th chapter of Yeshayahu, it condemns one nation. Here, the Yahweh is just a matter of years from his return, and there's only one nation on earth that he strives to condemn. It's the United States of America. And for those who are awake, whose eyes are open, now you know why. It's frightening, isn't it, guys? Repulsive.
It is. And just a reminder to everybody, when Abraham went to Yah and he said, "Why can't Ishmael, can I have Ishmael?" And
mm-hmm.
What
yeah.
do you say?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. So who do you think is going to wind up controlling Jerusalem in the ultimate?
I know what God said about the reallocation of the land in Israel upon his return. Goes right back to the original 12 tribes. You know, I wish that the Sioux were, no, I don't wish the Mormons were right and the Sioux were really Jew. But, you know, it would be nice in a way to say, you know, I have a place in Israel. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be joyous when Yah returns. I'm going to enjoy his home on Mount Moriah. I'm going to enjoy going into Dode's home, also on the ridgeline of Moriah. Going to enjoy the view. Going to enjoy the party. Going to enjoy the company. But it's not my home.
Does Yahweh view an adopted child any difference than a natural-born child? Of course not.
No. But it's Yehudim that he says are going to inherit the land. The reaffirmation of his covenant is with Israel. Right. It's with Yehudah. It's not with us Goyim.
No.
And the mythical people masquerading as Palestinians are most assuredly Goyim. And they worship a God that was modeled after Satan and follow the military, jihadi, terrorist advice of the most perverted man who ever lived. No. What the United States did was absolutely unjustifiable. It was horrific. It shows the depravity to which America has fallen. Go ahead, Kirk.
I don't know how much time we have, but let me throw out one more little thing. He said about in the middle of the speech, he said, most people do not want a one-state solution. The two-state solution is the only way. The Palestinians, in order for the Palestinians to fulfill their potential.
Hmm. Now, two-state, by the way, why is two states carved out of Israel? Solution.
They didn't like
what,
it when,
how in the world would you, I mean, is there any indication amongst these people, this religion, their history, their behavior, that is a solution? What is it about Gaza that you don't get? What is it about Gaza that we don't get?
Well, here's my thing. Is Israel holding them back in some way? Is Israel saying that you cannot live your life to the fullest here in Israel?
No.
Well, they would try to claim that that's so, but they've never had a better deal based on them never having a better deal anywhere in a Muslim country versus here.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, versus there.
Uh-huh.
That would be a hard battle to debate. And if that was so important, why didn't they give the Kurds the land back? Why don't they give the cops carve out something for the cops in Egypt?
Right. Why not?
Why don't we carve out part of Texas and give it to the Mexicans?
Why don't we give the Midwest to the indigenous people?
Yeah.
The Sioux.
You know, Alabama had a giant group of people there called Creed Indians. They were very peaceful.
The Creed actually existed. They actually had a claim to the land.
Yes, they did. And at a horseshoe bend, they drove them all off. What was left of them.
There is no such thing as a Palestinian. They have no claim to the land. But the Kurds do. They're not given any land. They're not given independence or a nation. The Sioux do. The Creeds do. The Seminoles do. You know, it's
so if this is supposed to be logical, then okay, now we got some real issues you got to deal with.
Right. Correct.
So
I think we'll continue this because there's nothing more important to Yahweh, nor more important to understand if you want to know where the world is headed than what we're discussing.